This is Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk. My guest today is 2015 Minnesota Music Hall of Famer Mick Sterling, whose name is ubiquitous in the Minnesota music scene. If you're a music lover in Minnesota, you have almost certainly seen one of the bands he runs. Mick's fondness for Elton John, Springsteen, and others became the basis of his performing and songwriting choices as he began his music career in 1980. Since then, he's been nonstop to this day producing countless shows, many of them tribute bands dedicated to performing the music of one artist, and performing in his band, Midwest favorite, Mick Sterling and the Stud Brothers. Additionally, and incredibly, Mick has also authored The Long Ride Home and the recently released book, And Else. You know, it's the perfect time to have him on Musician Talk because The Love Show, a show he put together and performs in, is at the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault, Saturday, February 12th at 7:30. I'm going, and I encourage you to do so too. Now, let's gain some insight to this uber-talented man. Let's talk with Mick Sterling. Hey, Mick, how are you doing? Welcome to Musician Talk.
I am fine. Thanks for having me, Pauline. I appreciate it.
I am very, very honored to have you on the show today. I've heard a lot about you, and it's just a joy to speak with you. Now, as well as spotlighting local area musicians, Musician Talk also focuses on people that will be playing in the area. And you, Mick, have a music review called The Love Show at the Paradise for Performing Arts in Faribault. The show is at 7:30 on Saturday the 12th, February the 12th. And this is a great idea for a Valentine date night.
I think it is too. It's going to be cool. You don't have to officially be in love to see the show. That's not the priority. You know, it's not a requirement to be in love. It's
not nice, at all. You don't have right. So there's three groups that could go. People that are in love, that are couple, people that are a couple that aren't in love and trying to get back in love. And then the singles out there that just want to hear some really great music.
That's right. That's right. And we'll take them all.
All right. I'd like to start the show with a brief run through your musical journey. And I'd like you to walk us down that path, starting with the memory that you had that I read about being performing in Golden Valley, a bar in Golden Valley at the age of four, and kind of take us up to your projects now. And we'll talk more about that stuff later.
Well, you know, I had some pretty interesting influences. My mom and dad were, you know, in the service industry, and my dad was a bartender. My mom was a server at the place. And so, you know, their friends were their employees, not their employees, but their coworkers at the bar. So I would go there, and there was this jukebox that was there in the bar. And one day I just stood up on made me stand up on the jukebox, and I sang King of the Road by Roger Miller. And, and it felt pretty good, you know? So, and, you know, I think I got some French fries from the bar and another Coke, and that made me feel pretty good. So that was fun. And then, you know, later my influences were rather interesting because my parents would play Ray Charles all day long, but I love the Monkees too. So I love Ray Charles and the Monkees. Those are really my first two major influences when I was a kid. So
that's great.
Diverse, but I like them. They're both great.
So then after you found that you loved performing, getting on that jukebox and singing, when you started elementary school, did you start lessons? Were you in any bands in school?
I wanted to be a drummer. And so I took drum lessons, not all the way through elementary school, but I did that through junior high school. I wasn't in a band until about ninth grade when I was singing. A person I actually still play with, Peter Gerton, on piano, we loved Elton John. Elton John is a huge, huge influence on me. And we Peter could play by ear. He could play any of that stuff. He was in ninth grade. He sounded like he was crazy good. He sounded like Elton.
Wow.
Now, I could sing Elton. He could play Elton. He could sing, but he wasn't very confident on it. And so we became great friends. And our first band was, we mirrored the Elton John band from the 11-17-70 album, which is one of the greatest live albums. If you're ever not aware of it, it is literally one of the greatest live albums of all time.
Okay.
And piano, bass, and drums. When Elton came to America the first time, and we basically did the entire album verbatim.
And you played out then? at that age?
Nope. I didn't play out until I was about 19 with a different band called, they were called the T. Skeeter Band, which eventually did turn into Mick Sterling and the Stud Brothers, which was the band that I was in for 17 years. That was really kind of the instigator of everything. But yeah, I was 19 is when I first started playing in clubs. It was Osceola, the Wolf's Den in Osceola, Wisconsin was the first show I ever played. I think I was about 19.
Wow. So did you take any vocal lessons?
I didn't. I could naturally sing. It would have been better for me to take vocal lessons, I assume. But I've been singing over 40 years. I've never had nodes. I've never had throat problems.
That's great.
I don't smoke. I've never smoked. I never did drugs. And so I think that's part of it. But I got lucky with this thing, you know?
Yeah. Because some people could sing and they sound really great, but they're not necessarily doing it right. And then they come across these problems.
Yeah. They get a lot of trouble. It's very scary for them. And thankfully that hasn't happened to me. I don't think it's going to happen to me, but it's very scary when that happens to other singers. It's terrifying.
Yes, I agree.
Well, you know, it's a different type of athleticism being a musician. You use muscles that other people don't use. And when you use it a lot, guitar players, sax players, drummers, they have, those are unique muscles being used to do that job.
Yep.
And when you do it for a long time, it's, you know, those muscles go, I'm done now, you know?
Right. Right.
And tell you when it doesn't feel good.
So I wanted to ask you about this band a little bit more, Mick Sterling and the Stud. And I just want to say Stud Muffins, and I don't know if this rolls off the tongue.
First one. That's okay.
Heard that before, is what you're saying?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Okay.
That band, I lived in St. Louis. I told you about the T. Skeeter Band.
Yeah.
We did that for a couple of years, changed into a band called Heat Treatment. And they were just a bunch of high school friends and some people that we knew. And we did that rather unsuccessfully for 3 or 4 years off and on.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had the opportunity to move to St. Louis to be in a full-time band, which I had never done. And okay. So I moved everything I had. I lived in St. Louis for almost 3 years. And when I came back, my old friends from T. Skeeter said, we have this idea for a band. And I just joined a band when I got back already, an original band. I said, well, you know, if you guys want to put it together, I'm happy to sing for it, but I've already got a band.
Right.
And so I came into the rehearsal and they had already picked the name out. They named me Mick Sterling. My real name is Michael Sterling Jensen. That's my real name.
Got it.
And it said Mick Sterling and the Stud Brothers. And I said, well, so I'm Mick Sterling. Yeah, you're Mick Sterling.
That's and a great said, name. Great stage name.
Yeah. And so, you know, we played again, rather unsuccessfully for about 6 months. And, you know, it was a 10 piece band. It was a lot. It was a lot.
Wow.
We couldn't get any gigs. And I told them, I said, you know, when I lived in St. Louis, there was a band that played every Sunday afternoon from like 4 to 7 PM at this little suburban bar in St. Louis. They weren't great. There was nothing special about them. They weren't bad,
right.
But they were fine. But that place was packed. It became this thing that people would just go to. And so I said, why don't we call Bunkers in Minneapolis, which was a place that we loved, and let's just call them and say, we'll play for free for 6 weeks on a Sunday. And after 6 weeks, if they don't like it, fine. And Bunkers said, yeah. And so after about 6 weeks, we had about 70, 75 people coming. And then in about 2 months after that, it was lines out the door for about the next 12 years. What happened was that this band became the hospitality workers Saturday night. Everybody had off on Sunday. So hairdressers, hotel workers, restaurant people, this was their night. And so they all came down and it was absolute insanity. It was. And so everything I'm doing now stemmed from the success of that band in about 1989. It lasted 17 years.
Wow.
We played every Sunday night at Bunkers for 17 years. We played about 200 shows a year.
Wow.
It was crazy, you know, all over the place.
That is great. And once you get that following at Bunkers, it seems, and people are coming, then anywhere you play in the cities, they see that your fan base sees it and says, all right, we're going there next.
Well, you know, it was a hell of a thing. I mean, they're, you know, in the list of bands that are kind of legendary institution bands in the Twin Cities, Lamont Cranston, Bee's Knees, Inside Straight, you know, Willie and the Bees, the Stud Brothers are in that list. Yeah. I'm very proud of that.
Well, that's terrific. And that it seems like you kind of learned about the formula, a little bit of the formula of how to make a band a success, that you had a really good taste of doing that for free for 6 weeks. What a great idea.
We thought, well, you know what? Let's create our own niche. And that's what we did.
How many people were in the band during this recording that you did for the A440 series?
In the clip, that's a 10 or 11 piece band. From the original band, I'm the only one from the original. But a lot of the guys have been with the band at least 15 years.
Oh, it's way. Just filled with heavy hitters.
Because we played so much, that band was musicians wanted to be in that band.
Sure. Yeah.
Because we were working a lot. But the level of it was so high, too, that it made it interesting for them to join the band. It's a burning band. It still is. It still sounds incredible.
This recording that we're going to play here in a minute is really incredible. It sounds so great. It's just,
thank you.
I love it. Do you want to go through and tell me who else is in the band?
You have, you know, legendary people, you know, Bobby Vandell on the drums, the late, great Billy Franzi. This was his last performance he did with the band. The last thing he did was this. He passed away just a few months ago. But so this is the last video image of Billy Franzi in this clip. Stephen Morgan on guitar, Mark Lichtai and Donna DeMarco on keys, Bob Holgrimson, Rich Manick, Brian Simons on horns. I mean, it's a heavy duty band.
It is. And you front the band, you sing in it, and you're a heavy hitter, Minnesota Hall of Famer yourself.
Well, thank you very much.
So let's take a listen to this. This is, I wanted to ask you, Take a Ride to the City is the name of the tune. Is this an original?
No, I wish it was. We have no idea where that song came from. Our trumpet player, Joe DeRasmi, brought it in like a beat up old cassette that he found in his car one day. And he goes, I haven't heard this in years. And we put it in and we went, this is a great song. And that band would kill this, you know, this band would kill that song. And he was right.
Yes.
I don't know who did the song, honestly.
I couldn't find it. I had all sorts of stuff about going to the city. So I'm like, this must be an original. I played it for Steve. I'm like, Steve, do you know who did this song?
We don't even know the actual real title of this song. I don't know what it is.
That's a great story. Okay. Knowing that, let's take a listen to Take a Ride to the City, performed by Mick Sterling and the Stud Brothers.
It's a long, long ride. Got to see my baby, sweet and kind. Just a ride downtown, down to the end of the block. If I don't get my baby, I got trouble in my house. Take a ride to the city, come on. I take a ride, oh yeah. If I don't get my baby, I'm gonna make that little girl. My baby, about 2 months back, went to see my baby, couldn't be no slack. Started hanging with my friends, you know how the story ends. Here come my baby, I'm in trouble again now. Well, take a ride to the city, bam. I take a ride, come on baby,
Come on, Joe, sing with me. Take a ride to the city, baby. It's a long, long ride. Got to see my baby, sweet and kind. She lives right downtown, and at the end of the block. If I don't get my baby, I got trouble in my head. Baby, if I don't, now, if I don't, baby, Stevie Morgan, take it
This is Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk, hosted by me. You just heard Take a Ride to the City, performed by my guest and his band, Mick Sterling and the Stud Brothers. Mick, you gotta love those horns. I mean, they just add so much to anything. It takes everything up a notch, many, many notches, actually. I think when you go out to see a show with horns in the band.
When I front that band, it feels like I'm in front of a locomotive. You know, it's just a huge feeling. And those guys hit it so hard.
Oh, and I love your voice. It's like you have this combination of this bluesy roughness with a smoothness that usually don't go hand in hand. And so that's pretty cool.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been a work in progress. You know, I honestly feel like I'm singing better now than I ever have. So that's been a nice surprise. I kind of thought it would get weaker as I got older, but it's kind of doing the opposite. I feel really confident with my voice.
So the other part of your life, other than performing, you put groups together. And in fact, you employ a lot of the top musicians in the state, in the cities, and by putting these groups together. And so thank you for doing these things that employ musicians.
You're welcome.
And I just want you to talk a little bit about that part of your life.
Well, you know, I enjoy putting things together. I think, you know, everybody has a talent that is unique to them. I mean, if I look at an engine of a car, I have no idea what it even means. I have no interest in it, you know, but that's not my thing. My thing, thankfully, is I can come up with ideas and find the right people to accomplish that idea. And because of the success of Mick Sterling and the Stud Brothers and the longevity of it, when I present something to somebody, my reputation is that I get things done. It's not just a flippant idea that won't get accomplished. So I think my reputation in the Twin Cities is if I call you and I say we're going to do a show, there's a very good chance we're going to do a show, and I would like you to be a part of this thing. But my philosophy too of being a band leader or putting things together, you have to trust the people that you hire.
Yeah,
you know, there's a reason that I wanted to hire them. I don't need to babysit them. I don't need to be on their backs. I expect them to do a job. They expect me to do my job, and there's a level of respect and trust that I think is important for shows to be successful and for people to look at the big picture and not just one gig.
Yeah.
You know, if we do this gig right, we could do this gig for the next 15 years. So don't focus on how much you're going to make on the first gig. Think about if this gig works, how much money are you going to make 10 years doing this gig? And that's and thankfully, because of that, I found people that, you know, that want to go with that thought process. All of the shows that I've produced have lasted a really long time. And because people had faith in the concept and they had faith that it was going to work, and they, you know, thankfully they did work.
Yeah, that's impressive that you have figured that out. And it's no small thing to have somebody call you and say, do you want to do this show? And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. Yeah. And to be able to trust that it's going to come to fruition, because the person at the helm is making that happen, is huge. Because often that kind of thing, because it's tough and it's a lot of work, tend to fall apart before they really get
most of them do. Most of them do. People lose interest. It was a good idea for a little while, then whoever created it got distracted with something else and they don't follow through with it. Yeah. And that's natural. That happens. But right. Thankfully, with the shows I'm producing, I get to perform with such incredible musicians. I mean, they're just the top.
Yeah.
But the great thing for me as a band leader is that they're lovely people too. They're really professional. I don't have to worry about if they're going to show up or they're not coming prepared. They're all coming in prepared.
And when did you start Mick Sterling Presents? When did you start producing and putting things together?
It was about 2008 when I kind of had the thought I should do this more. There's a group called the Fabulous Armadillos that do different, they kind of started this whole scene. And so they would hire me to sing in a couple of their shows and they're great. And they're still great. They're the kings of this genre in the region. Nobody tops them. And then I did my own Elton John show with Peter. And from then on, I've created, almost 40 since then of different, all different stuff. But the Elton was was really the first one. It's a very, he's such an important artist to us. Mm. But when we did the Elton John show, we debuted it at the Chanhassen in the Fireside Room. It's a little 250 seat theater. The show was like 3.5 hours, but we were doing really deep Elton John songs that people went, I can't believe you did that song.
Right. Yeah. You never hear that people play that live.
That song, and that's, so, it's the combination of the deep stuff and the hits and that we do with huge bands. But 2009, I think that's when I started in earnest really doing this.
And along with the honoring groups that honor certain individual artists, you also put reviews together. And this is one that you put together for the Paradise and for Valentine's Day, the Love Show.
Yeah. I can't take credit for the concept of this. One of my band members, and they run New Folk Booking, Lisi and John Wright. This was an idea that because they would book different shows and performing arts centers like Paradise.
Yeah.
And a lot of them will go, well, do you have a show for Valentine's Day?
Of course.
We didn't at the time. And then, so this year when we got down doing the Christmas shows, we thought, well, let's see if we can put this together. Cause I think it is a good idea.
Yes.
And so this is the debut on the 12th of this show. So we're really excited that we're doing it in the friendly confines and the very intimate and unique confines of the Paradise too. And that room sounds so good too.
It does.
A great place to play. So we're looking forward to that.
As a great segue to Smooth Operator by Sade. That's sung by Kate.
Kate Fierro was her name.
And she's going to be at the show on the 12th, singing love songs to the audience. So, okay, let's take a listen to the beautiful, beautiful singing by your wife, Kate, on this song called Smooth Operator. You are listening to Musician Talk, hosted by me, Pauline Jennings. Today I'm speaking with Minnesota Music Hall of Famer Mick Sterling. You just heard the Sade tune, Smooth Operator, performed by one of the bands Mick put together and runs. Well, now everybody else got to hear what a great singer she is. And again, just filled with incredible musicians, this show is as well.
Yep, it is. Yeah.
And I have a question that I didn't ask before about the programming. Tell me just a little bit about how you make decisions about which songs you're gonna pick. I mean, you said you want to make sure that you pick songs that you like and that resonate with you and excite you. But how about programming and putting them together?
Yeah, I mean, there's a flow as a front person that you have to, you know, you can't do four ballads in a row. I have a good idea of what flows well with an audience. So I always try and come up with a set list that I think will work for an audience. But every artist that we do is different. You know, the love show that we're doing is really, it is unique in the sense that it's not just one artist like the other shows that I do. So I'm really looking, that's going to be fun just to have it go all over the place. But, you know, playing music is such a human connection. I'm not a huge fan of set lists per se. I do it more in doing tribute shows, because we don't play every day like we did with the Stud Brothers. When I was with the Stud Brothers, I never had a set list. I would turn around and go, do that song. You know, it was completely, and it was completely based off of how it felt, how the audience felt at that particular time. You know, so it is a feel thing that I try and do as much as I can when I create the set list.
You touched a little bit about the importance or the connection that the human connection that music makes. I want to mention that you have written a book that just recently came out.
Yes, yeah, And Else came out in March of 2021.
It's called And Else, A Version of Life According to Mick Sterling. And according to the synopsis, I haven't gotten the book and read it yet. But according to the synopsis, the book is about the importance of what's important in life. And one of those things, of course, is music. I think that music is so important in our lives, and the arts are the first thing to go in schools. And it just really breaks my heart, because I think it's probably the most important thing, because it helps learning in all other areas, not only in school, but in your life. So now that I gave you my little spiel, talk to me a little bit about the importance of music.
Well, I mean, it was huge for me. It was everything for me when I was a kid, learning how to play drums and singing and listening to records for hours and hours in my room, just having that. I mean, I guess it's spiritual in some way, that connection that you have between a spinning album and what's coming out of that album and what sinks into your soul from it. I mean, that's a connection. Yeah. And music, you know, music has based everything I do is based off of, you know, because of me performing and writing songs and the success from that. And Else, you know, there's a lot of, you know, it's kind of a random series of chapters that some are kind of funny and some are serious and sarcastic and funny and weird. And then some are, you know, horrendously sad. I mean, the word And Else was my son Tucker passed away a couple of years ago when he was 29. And so there's a chapter in the book about, you know, how we learned about that. And, you know, it was obviously awful. And, but when Tucker was a little boy, he came up with that word, And Else. It's not a word, but he used it as a word in lieu of And Then. Like, so he go, if I want to watch, you know, the example I say in the book is, I want to watch Ninja Turtles, And Else Gargoyles. You know, that's a pretty good word, you know. So I thought that would be a good word to describe this book, you know. And, you know, and one of the crazy things, Pauline, is that on the back of the book, Louis Anderson gave me an unbelievable endorsement and was so kind. And, you know, Louis just passed away just a few weeks ago. And it was I was very blessed to get to know him the last couple of years. He was just a lovely, lovely man. And he read my book and he thought it was really, really funny. Like I couldn't believe it. I think Louis, I said, I think you actually read the entire book. He goes, I did. I loved it. So, nice. You know, that did not hurt my feelings that Louis Anderson.
No.
I'm very, very proud of that book. And now the kind of unique thing is there's an audiobook version of Vandals that's on a jump drive. And I recorded it live in front of an audience. I read it, the entire book, in front of an audience, no cuts, no edits. I read the book. And so I've never heard an audiobook like that before. And it's very raw. And I was really happy with how little I had to stop. I just kept reading. And sometimes, you know, I stopped because I couldn't compose myself. It just, you know, but I just kept it all in. You know, this is an author reading their book. And that's what I did.
That's a great idea. That's really, really a great idea. And I listen to a lot of audiobooks. I've never, ever, ever seen that or heard that.
I haven't either. But it seems like it would take forever to do an audio. I just can't. I don't want to spend that much time doing that.
I did one. My father's friend wrote a book.
Okay.
Not a real long one. I mean, it was only this thick. But my God, the edits. Oh.
It's hard. I just kind of decided that I was going to make a live album of my book. You know, that's basically what I did.
I've really talked about a lot of things here today, and unfortunately we're out of time, and I would like actually to have you on again at some point in time to talk more about your book.
Great. Thank you. When we play the show on Saturday, on the 12th, if people want to get an audio book version of it, I'll have those.
Got it. Okay. I would like to talk about, because it's kind of something we do at every show, and unbelievably, I'm almost on my 50th show. I know. Woo-hoo. Started it during COVID. So some of the silver linings that happened during that.
Yeah.
So best gig, worst gig. I'm sure you have a lot of both, but I like to start with the best gig. With the worst gig, so we can end on a high note. Although the worst gigs sometimes can be the best because they may be the funniest when we laugh at our mistakes. What do you got for us?
I think a lot of the worst gigs at the time are, you know, when you're playing, you're literally playing for nobody.
Yes.
There's nobody there. You know, I did a show in St. Louis. Now that you bring this up, but I did a show in St. Louis. It was the last day of the baseball regular season. It was the Cardinals and the Cubs. And whoever won that game was going to be in the playoffs. And so this is 1986. And the bar had this huge, you know, back in those days, the big TVs were gigantic. They weighed a ton.
Right.
And they put this TV right in front of the stage.
Oh, no.
And so it was watching the game. And it's like the fourth, you know, the fourth inning, it's 9 o'clock. And the manager of the room goes, okay, start playing. And we're going, why don't we just wait till the game's over?
Right.
We'll take shorter breaks. But nobody, everybody wants to watch the game. I'm paying you to play. Play.
Oh, no.
So we start playing. And me and the bass player and the guitar player are up front. But this TV is so huge. All you can see we're behind you can just see our eyes in the top of our head. Screaming at us. They're so upset. Shut up! Because they want to watch the game. That was one of the worst.
Sounds absolutely horrifying.
That was really boring, you know, chicken wire scene. You know, that was closest to that.
It's like if somebody would have handed out tomatoes, you guys would have had tomatoes all over you. Oh, awful.
Best gig, I would say any of the Bayfront Blues Fests that the Stud Brothers did in Duluth. Very, very magical. Really, the last one we did, I would say was one of the top ones, just because we hadn't been there in 15 years. So excited to see us. The band sounded so good, but it really was that really rare thing between a band and an audience where it was just like, my God, I missed you.
Oh, how nice.
Crying, band was crying. It was just, it was palpable. Really one of the most palpable performances I've ever been involved in. It was great. And that was just a couple of years ago. And that was quite a moment. That was quite a moment.
And what a place to play. It really is something else. Okay. That festival outside there.
Yep.
Beautiful stages and really great music.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing those stories with me. Those both were great. In closing, I want to say I encourage everyone out there to go get tickets for the show on February 12th at Paradise Center for the Arts to see The Love Show on Saturday the 12th at 7:30 to celebrate love, any kind of love you want to celebrate, and to celebrate great music. Where can people find you online so they know not just about the show on the 12th, but also more shows that you play at the Paradise anywhere?
MickSterlingPresents.com has all the information about my shows and bios and my charity, the 30 Days Foundation, and the times that we're coming back to the Paradise, which I hope will be many because we love it there.
Awesome. I wanted to touch on your charity. And next time you come back, we'll talk about your book and your charities because you do a lot of really great works. And thank you for what you do, even though we didn't get to talk about it. But yes, it is great. Giving back like that is really great. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come here. I hope I can get to the show on the 12th. Go get your tickets now to that show at ParadiseCenterForTheArts.org. That's where you go for tickets for that. Yeah. So thank you, Mick, so much. And it was great to meet you. Honored to talk to you.
All right, thanks so much.
Have a great day. Many thanks to Mick for joining me today for this terrific conversation and for sharing his stories and talent with us. And heartfelt gratitude to you for listening to Musician Talk on the One, KYMN. Have a terrific day.